Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for coming here today. I decided that we should introduce ourselves, so I'm going to introduce Shashank Pawar. Shashank is our...
Hang on a second. Your name's Reed here.
Okay.
Introduce yourself.
My name's Reed Purvis. I am Microsoft's data center technical specialist based in New South Wales, and I cover virtualization, Windows Server capabilities and technologies, and System Center. So we're going to do a bit of a double act here.
Thanks, Reed. So my name is Shashank Pawar, guys, the SQL Server Technology Specialist. So I'll be covering this session from a SQL side, and just a show of hands of how many guys are here from a SQL DBA side or SQL side. Woohoo! Don't let down to the Hyper-V or the VMware guys, right? So SQL Server, power to the V.
We're gonna have a bit of a competition smackdown. It's infrastructure guys versus SQL guys. And so whenever we cheer for the infrastructure people, I'll let you know, and we need to make lots of loud noises. So what we're going to go through today is there's a brief agenda. The process is I'm going to represent the infrastructure side of things and how to support and make SQL run best on Hyper-V in terms of the infrastructure side. We're then going to go through and talk a bit about SQL Server, and Shashank is going to do that. A little bit about the private cloud. We're going to go back and forth on a few slides, and Shashank is going to do all the demos because he's the demo god. And then from there, we'll go through a few resources and leave lots of time for questions answered. We really would like to make this session interactive. I know it's after lunch, but feel free if you have any questions to shout them out, and we'll try to take some as we go through and see how the timing goes. So, just to reiterate, if you've seen any how many people have seen a presentation here this week so far? That should be everybody, right? Okay. So good. At least you haven't been dead. You've heard about Microsoft Hyper-V and virtualization platform. You've heard probably that we actually have these products, SharePoint, SQL, and Exchange, and that we like to say that they can be virtualized, and they are, and we do lots of good things here. Obviously, these applications are all supported within the environment using SQL or using System Center, the whole family. I've spoken about that previously. Is anyone not aware of the System Center tool suite? Great. Hold on a second here. You're just putting your hand up, right? You never heard of it. Well, okay, briefly speaking, it is our management suite that allows you to both do application, OS, server, and virtualization management, allows you to get and tune all the knobs and dials for these applications. Definitely a key component of Microsoft's strategy for private and clouds. So what we've done as a part of the testing and precursor, there's presentations already today, talked a bit about Hyper-V and some of the capabilities and details of that, so I'm not going to run through those again. I want to reiterate and just talk a bit briefly about the performance aspects for this. We've done a lot of testing, and this is, I guess, kind of a standard deck. You might have seen this slide before, but I do want to talk to you. Well, the graphs have been taken out, haven't they? About those performance things. We have some graphs later on in the presentation. Suffice it to say that from a virtualization perspective, if you missed out on my talk at the last session, is the same performance no matter what real hypervisor you're running on. They all use the same virtualization technology from a chipset and a hardware perspective. They all basically, if you haven't overcommitted them, fundamentally have the same capabilities in terms of pure raw performance. So we provide capabilities in Windows for built-in virtualization. We have obviously a large set of partners which support that in a cross-platform environment. Also provide a lot of capabilities for virtualization and migrating back and forth. One question that happened last session, offline here at the end of my session, was about how do you migrate from physical to virtual and back. Guess what? We have some built-in capabilities called boot from VHD, which allows you to do that seamlessly without necessarily having to worry about having all your drivers and virtualization stuff built in. So you can boot a VHD and have it run in a virtual machine, or you can boot back to physical. And that way you can get some real-world capability to say, oh, I want support on this or physical app or what have you. So based on that, we really talk about the performance and scalability of these. The performance of VHDs, as an example, is generally speaking very, very close to physical disks. There is a small, as you can see, minuscule, I'll call that, difference. That is significantly overwhelmed or made irrelevant by the design, configuration, performance of your disk I/O subsystem, the caching, all the other things which have so much more impact.
So Reed, just a question on this one. This is based on a study, I think it was done. I know you had the previous slide, you flicked over it, but just in case you missed it, it was a study done by an independent, we commissioned a study to be done by an independent analyst organization called ESG, and they went ahead and simulated a SQL Server workload, and that simulated workload was based on an online brokering system. So lots and lots of concurrent hits, you know, typical OLTP type of application. And so it's important to know that in the context of looking at this graph. So it absolutely talks about hypervisor not really adding a lot of overhead.
Absolutely. And again, very similar in nature. Here is a graph that you saw from my previous presentation with one small exception. Oh, it didn't, a little add in. One small exception that was right there is the recommended SQL performance size for your block size is actually 64K block sizes on your disk. So when you're looking at laying out your disk formats for virtualization, it's important to think about how you do that relative to a physical environment. I think I had a hand set of examples at the last session. How many people actually have disk subsystems where they use 1K block sizes? How about 8K block sizes? One or two maybe? Guess what? Most people, and recommended best practices, is certainly way up towards this 8, 16, 32, or 64K block sizes for your NTFS. And when you're looking at that, you can clearly see that the overall performance and throughput you can get out of your hypervisor is very similar to a physical environment. So here's that same graph with a line. This is the SQL workload results that Shashank was mentioning here, and really talks about the fact that as you were pumping and doing these tests, ESG were looking at the actual performance, and really shows as the workloads increase in linear scale, you'll find that the latency less than doubles. So you see that it moves up from just under 100 to about 170 or so. And that's just an indicative example to show that we do have scaling. Absolutely, at this time, our largest virtual machines on Hyper-V are four-way symmetric multiprocessing, four vCPUs. And the last session told you that Hyper-V 2000 or Hyper-V Server 8, or codename 8, will support much more than that. As a brief recap, we oftentimes have to educate our database counterparts on some of the capabilities of Hyper-V because some of them seem to be stuck a little bit in the past.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Anyway.
We'll come to that. we certainly can support live migration, high availability. We'll also do some great stuff with dynamic memory. So dynamic memory, the ability to have a virtual machine where it can release memory and grab memory from the system and balance that out so that it can get optimal performance. And Shashank will talk a lot about some of the capabilities that SQL will take advantage of some of that. Mm-hmm. Shashank.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much, Reed. So hopefully the DBA guys in the room instill some confidence about virtualization around SQL Server. If 5 years ago I was up on the stage and was asked to present on virtualizing SQL Server, absolutely the answer, or for that matter, any relational database workload, the answer would have been no, right? Unless you're doing it for dev and test sort of environments. So absolutely for production environments or even those tier one apps, don't even consider it. Now we've come far in terms of the innovation at the hypervisor layer, the hardware layer that Reed had talked about as well. And we've come up with a reference architecture. So this was actually released in TechEd North America. So those of you who've, you know, had interest in and have seen this this particular slide may have also been aware of, we actually gave handouts of the same slide, which essentially talks about the four pillars that make up a SQL private cloud. And this is all based on today's technology. It's all based on Windows Server Hyper-V, based on System Center Virtual Machine Manager, System Center Operations Manager. But the four key tenets that you're seeing up there, from the left to the right. So left is all about resource pooling. It's all about getting to know your environment and consolidating SQL Server. So as you would with any sort of consolidation workload or project, you would go through and understand your environment. The next thing is about creating a target environment that's going to actually scale to those needs that you have today, but be elastic to be able to grow to the needs for your future. And then the last two is essentially what makes it a private cloud implementation. If you just left it at the first two tenets, all you've achieved is really a consolidation outcome. The last two add the self-service capability, the management and monitoring capability that make it a cloud offering, essentially. And so we'll see each of these tenets in play. So why do we even consider private cloud? I mean, what are the drivers behind it? So there's three main things that I'll talk about, and one of them is around managing growth. Typically, when I talk to customers, and I'm sure you see this issue in your organizations as well, is this well-known problem of SQL Server sprawl. You know, you'll have IT the business go off and hear about some Fandangle application. This application is going to solve their problems, and it's all based on SQL Server. So they go off to IT, ask for a server, ask for SQL database to be provisioned. IT is obviously busy doing what IT does. They haven't got back in time, so what? Guess what? The business users have gone through, acquired a server somehow, or started to install SQL by getting the media on their desktops and put together a SQL server. Because it's fairly easy. We all know Microsoft make great install wizards, and so it's a matter of just pressing next, 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 and you've got a SQL database environment. So you end up with this, these sort of issues replicated throughout the business, and you end up with a sprawl of SQL servers, and how do you manage this environment? So by doing the steps that we will talk about today, you'll be able to go through and manage some of that growth. Then more importantly, from a compliance perspective, which is starting to become very, very critical in organizations. You know, we've had the Sarbanes-Oxley, from a FSI organization or the financial services industry is all about the PCI compliance, and the health has got, its own regulations. In Australia, it's still, I think we're still a bit behind in terms of the compliance requirements compared to the US, but obviously if you're working for multinationals, this becomes a critical part. So auditors will come in, they'll want to know where's your data, is it tightly secured? But again, having it in an environment where it's centralized, where it's managed, you're able to prove that fairly easily and control it. And lastly, this is more of a, how does IT provide back the goodness to the world by managing the environment in which the IT data centers and things like that run. So, you know, the cooling costs, the electricity costs. We internally, Microsoft, as you can imagine, are big users of SQL Server. I think the last count was around about 5,000 servers running SQL internally, and that only being managed by about, I think, 60 to 70 DBAs worldwide. So pretty good ratio there if you think about it. That's the instances, and the number of databases just gets pretty crazy. So I won't go there. But essentially, we went through a similar process and went through and created a Hyper-V-based SQL utility environment. And through that whole project, we actually saw on the last point itself a ratio of about 1-6 saving on cooling cost. And it actually, funny enough, that 1-6 ratio carried on to other things, like even data center space, the number of amount of empty space we were able to recover. I mentioned power, cooling costs, electricity costs. So all of those were approximately in the 1-6 ratio. And we've got a whole case study around around this on our MSIT site. So if you're interested in looking at further details on that. So with that, I'm going to go into each of those pillars that I had in the poster or on the slide previously. First one we're going to talk about is resource pooling. So resource pooling is all about, as I mentioned, understanding your environment. So first of all, before creating what your target environment or your target cloud looks like or your target virtualized SQL Server environment looks like, you need to understand what you're running today. So how do you do that? Well, one way is that you may have good documentation. How many of you can face up to the fact that you have good documentation of all your IT systems? One guy. Well, he's very brave. Oh, he's even shaking his head.
He must be an infrastructure guy.
Come on, man. DBA for sure. Dude, we had another hand up here as well. Anyway, so obviously we a lot of people here are in the similar sort of position as a lot of organizations where, you know, it's hard to know of what applications are deployed, what application portfolio is running, and especially the SQL Server backend that's running on, where it's running. How many of you guys have heard of Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit? Yeah, good fair number. Have you used it for SQL discovery at all? Excellent. That's good to hear. For those of you who haven't, and there are quite a lot that didn't have their hands up in the air, it's a great tool that we make available for free on the TechNet site. It's a Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. This slide got changed for some reason. We are up to version 6.0 now. And we're having a whole session on this, aren't we, Reed?
There is. Tomorrow. There's a map session, I think, on the schedule. I'm not 100% sure what day it is, but if you look for it.
So there's a whole session on the tool, but the tool from this session's perspective allows you to do discovery of SQL Server, SQL Servers in your environment. It also allows you to do discovery since version 5.5, we added the ability, oh, I think 5.0, we added the ability to also discover non-SQL Server environments. So if you've got those ratty little MySQL or Oracle servers or Sybase servers running and you want to move them to a great platform like SQL Server, you're able to discover those with Maps tool. It actually also does non-SQL things. Again, like things like Windows 7 discovery readiness and Office 2010 deployment readiness. But you'll find more about that in the other session. So it's a great tool, one that download for free off TechNet. The next tool that also helps in determining what the environment can look like, your target environment can look like, it takes actually the output of the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, which you'll see what the tool produces shortly in a demo, is an add-in to Excel called the Consolidation Planning Toolkit for SQL Server. It's in version 1.0. And it takes that data from the Maps Toolkit and goes, okay, this is what my current environment looks like. This is what my target environment for my private cloud is going to look like or my virtualized SQL Server is going to look like. How many of these SQL Server that you've discovered can actually go through and fit into my target environment. So it helps you with actually doing a lot of that sizing. And once you've discovered those environments, some of those you may want to deal with if they're already at SQL Server 2008 R2, the latest version, then you may just want to do a straight migration into the virtualized environment. But some of those that are getting towards the unsupported versions, like SQL 2000 and 7.0 and definitely you don't want to be running too many 6.5. Just out of curiosity, anybody running 6.5 still, SQL Server? That's good. 7.0?
One or two there. Oh, absolutely. Are there gentlemen here in the center?
And 2005, I'm sure, is... 2000, sorry, I missed it. 2000,
yeah. Few,
oh,
yeah,
okay. Well, you know, the end of support is coming on that. Oh, well, it's pretty much out of the mainstream support and... Yes. Well, the Service Pack 4 is still, as long as you're on Service Pack 4, you're still sort of safe. But start thinking about getting, and this might be a good opportunity. So if you're going to put in a private cloud or doing a consolidated environment, you can look at doing the upgrade. And we have tools around that with the Upgrade Advisor. So definitely run that. It'll tell you what are the things you need to fix pre and post an upgrade process. And then if you've got those little MySQL or Oracle environments that you're wanting to modernize and bring into a SQL environment, SSMA, the Migration Assistant Toolkit, can assist with that. So Reid, you want to talk about some of the Hyper-V goodness?
Fantastic. So Shashank has gone through quite a lot about how to move databases across. Absolutely key in consolidation. My question to the audience here is, how many people would prefer to consolidate their databases onto instances of SQL versus consolidation at the OS level? What about consolidation at the instance or SQL database level? Yeah, a few of you? How many people are consolidating currently by virtualizing the OS and moving that onto? So looks like pretty much equal or roughly the same. They basically offer different perspectives and different mechanisms for that. Obviously, some requirements are for specific OS patches, specific implementations or instance details of the SQL application and data. But you can go through that process and consolidate in both fashions. And they both have pros and cons. Obviously, Shashank's talked a bit about the fact of reducing your, you know, your SQL licensing and basically consolidating the management, maintenance, and overhead of your SQL databases. But virtualizing at the hardware layer is also a viable choice because you can maintain compatibility. You know, from an infrastructure perspective, if I move that SQL server around in a virtual machine, it's not going to necessarily impact the SQL DBA or the application owner, obviously resource and constraints permitting. So we want to make sure that we do that. And virtualization on Hyper-V is the best choice for doing that. So let's go on and talk a little bit more about the next component and I think get into the demo.
Yep, absolutely. So I'll talk about
resource pooling.
Great. So we'll get into a demo about the map toolkit. So hopefully it's coming up shortly. So here I am on a Windows box. Map toolkit, by the way, can be installed on client OSs as well as Windows Server OSs. And essentially, it gets installed, and it's under the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. I'll go through and start it up. Once it starts up, it actually asks for a SQL database. Essentially, all it requires is a SQL. It actually installs a SQL Express edition. And I've gone through and I had a previously created database, but it goes off and uses that to collect all the results. So those of the DBAs in the room or the more of the curious kind can actually go through and also query the database from the back-end perspective. But in typical Microsoft fashion, we provide visits around making the discovery fairly easy. So what I'm going to choose here is there's an option here in terms of what you want to do an inventory on. So in our case, we're interested in SQL servers and maybe also some of the non-SQL server environments like MySQL and Oracle and Sybase. I'll click on that.
So in the last session, you could have consolidated VMware, which is good.
Yeah. So this is now asking me, how do we want to actually go through and discover these environments? Do I want to do it via an IP address range, or do I want to do it via AD or Active Directory? Or if you've already got System Center in your environment, do you want to look at SCCM's asset in registry and then do it based on that? So I'm going to use the AD. And just in terms of the demos that I'm going to be doing today, the scenario is that we are a book publishing company called Lucene. And Lucene's a very well-established company in the U.S. You might have heard of them.
Did I see them in the hall?
I think they're setting up in the hall, so we might be helping them with some of their infrastructure later on. So we'll look at that. So anyway, so their name's Lucene, and I'm going to put in their domain name, and here put in their administrator account. Now, all this is doing at the moment is actually just connecting off to Active Directory. So at this moment, it doesn't need to be an administrative account, but just for demo purposes, I am using an administrative account with a super secret password there. I'm sure none of you could guess that one. But essentially, now I'm connected to AD. Once I'm connected to AD, I can actually specify specific organizational units. So if you've got your AD all nicely organized and you want to just look at all the servers under your server OU, for example, you can go through and do that. I'm just going to go and let it do everything. So this is where now it's asking me, what credentials should I use to actually connect and get the information of each of the machines? So to make this really easy, one should actually use the domain-level administrator account. Now you might go, oh, geez, that's quite a high privilege account. And yes, you'll only do this once, and you get them to enter it once. You get your sysadmins or the guys who have the security credential to go through and enter that once. So I'm going to enter that. Go through, hit save, and hit next. Now this is just asking me what ways do we want to discover SQL Server. So the first one is using WMI or Windows Management Instrumentation queries to go off and again, these are going to be all things that are either WMI service by default is on, but if it's not in your environment, then it'll try some of these other ways of trying to discover SQL Server in your environment. So I'll go through and click finish and let it go through and do its job. At this point, or actually before I even get into and run this at my customer site, I typically get a question about how long is this going to run? Will it impact my production networks? Are you going to bring down any of my workloads? And touch wood, I've run this across many government, financial institutions, banks, and haven't brought any of them down yet. Essentially, this is throttled. So it doesn't do, I think it does about 30 pings per second. So it doesn't go off and flood your network. It's agentless, so you don't have to go off and install it in multiple servers. But it doesn't actually take care of if you've got multi-domains or if you've got segmented networks, then you'd have to go through and install it on each of those environments. But I'll go through and hit close here. It's come back and discovered some environments. Right from within the tool, we can actually get an idea of what it discovered. So here it found three SQL 2008 R2s versions and SQL 2005. It's got a pretty little graph showing you that same sort of information. It can do the same thing for the Oracle versions and actually also goes through, at the same time, inventories all your products in your environment as well. So it, not only the SQL-related discovery, but if you wanted to look at what else was installed, it's able to do that. I can now go through and prepare a report for this and export it out into, by default, Excel and Word files. So I'm going to...
I was going to say, it's a fantastic way to make you look like a hero to your CIO or management. Say, look like a, here's all the reporting I've done. I've sweated all night, created all these graphs and everything else like that, and it just automatically generates it, so...
Yeah, absolutely. So here's
I can tell that Gavin's done that.
Don't give away that secret.
Okay, well,
Sure. I hope none of your managers are in the room, right? So, SQL, so this is the export, what it looks like. So we've got, Excel spreadsheet, which has the summary of number of databases that were found in total. Not only the database services, but you can see integration services, reporting services, all of the things that SQL now bundles with, right? When we go into the further details, it tells you the IP address, it tells you the server name, it tells you whether it was clustered, whether it was virtualized already, what versions, what service packs. So you got a lot of that detail you're going to need to start thinking about what your target environment is going to look like. And similarly for all the components as well. In map 5.0 onwards, we actually also introduced one level deeper. So this used to be the case when we had map version 2 or 3. It would only go down to the infrastructure level. And now we go into the database level as well. So we can actually see by version how many databases are there deployed out and actually go and have a look at things like what was the size of those databases, what logins were against those particular databases, what are the configurations for each of those databases. So again, as you can imagine, these are all of the things that you need to think about when you're looking at creating that consolidated sort of environment. And then this is Reed's secret. This is how he gets all his promotion, right? So it actually goes through and creates a template and a Word, nice little Word document that you can use to have as a business case or so, and you can use this as a starting point.
Us infrastructure people were just clever that way.
Yeah, we'll question that. But anyway, and then it does a similar thing for your Oracle and non-SQL server environments. So MySQL running here on not only Windows, right? It also goes off and detects any of the environments that are non-Windows, so Red Hat, Linux, Fedora, HPUX, so on and so forth. So, well, and it does a similar sort of a report from there. So hopefully that's given you an insight into what MAP can do and got you excited about downloading the MAP toolkit. The next common question from here is, okay, I've now got all of this information, and Reed sort of touched on this, is virtualizing SQL Server still the best option? Is it still going to make sense when especially SQL Server presents itself with multiple options itself? It's got the ability to consolidate multiple databases in an instance, then multiple instances on a shared OS, and then obviously virtualization itself and some of the other future things as well as actually a cloud, with SQL Azure. So where does all of this fit in? And absolutely, so with some of the performance matrix that we saw with the ESG's results, the test results, we're actually starting to see SQL Server or any of the sort of database-related workloads can now actually be virtualized. And there is all the benefits that the virtualization layer provides from a deployment perspective or the ease of deployment perspective and the manageability that it provides, especially with the tight framework that Reed talked about around System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, and Operations Manager, which you'll get to see shortly. But there's still, I think, when it comes to virtualizing SQL Server, I think it's still early in the days. I mean, typically what I've seen with customers is that people are still very, very comfortable now with virtualizing web servers, virtualizing file and print servers. When it comes to SQL Server, there's, again, that I think there has been that always, 5 years ago, as I mentioned, there's always been that historical sense that no way are you going to do a heavy IO-bound workload, virtualize that, right? Because virtualization abstracts that. It's going to kill my application performance. Am I seriously going to do that?
Right now, obviously, Hyper-V only supports four-way symmetric multiprocessing in a VM and up to 64 gigabytes of RAM in a virtual machine. So SQL Server is supported virtualized on larger VMs on other platforms. Obviously, VMware is one of them. It's not that it's not supported. We believe that as the maturity of this stuff grows, that it's definitely going to be a supported capability. I think you should consider. I had a gentleman in the last session who told me he had an 8-way symmetric multiprocessing VM for a SQL Server, and my question to him is, why? I think there's a question there to be asked if that's a reasonable thing to be done and if it's the best thing to be done. Obviously, such a large database server would be a mission-critical item, and my question is, do you end up with the performance predictability relative to making sure that us as infrastructure people, at least those who are, maybe might be squeezing that database guy down unnecessarily or arbitrarily, and we can do that without their knowledge. So I think you have to have a lot more cooperation and coordination in the organization to make sure that stuff doesn't happen from a management perspective.
Yeah, absolutely, good point. Yeah, so I think the second point here about known virtualized SQL Server, if it's greater than 4 vCPU, and I think the wording there is a bit harsh. It's consider your options at that stage. If your workload is going to get at 4 vCPU and 64 gigs, then maybe it's not something you want to put in a private cloud environment or a consolidated environment along with your other tier 2, tier 3 workload. Maybe it has a different SLA requirements and availability requirements. So consider that application may still need to go on its own physical environment. So it's a decision making point rather than a enforced rule to say no, you cannot virtualize it. Some of the best practices, some of this Reed covered earlier, so I'm going to go through them fairly quickly. But from a hardware support perspective, as long as your virtualized environment hardware is about 1 or 2 years old, from an HP perspective, they're our sponsors, so I should give them a bit of a plug. G7 chipsets and G7 series servers and above absolutely have the SLAT support. Make sure you're virtualizing on those environments. But it's not good only having the hardware level support. You want to make sure your software or the hypervisor layer also supports that. So in Hyper-V, it's the Windows Server 2008 R2 Service Pack 1. Now, Reid talked about these fantastic capabilities, and these VM guys, these infrastructure guys, always tend to do this, oversell their technology. You know, SQL guys don't listen to, don't take their word. Make sure you question them and make sure you're getting what you need for SQL performance, right? So with that, they'll say, you know, if VMware or Hyper-V can do dynamic memory allocation, we can oversubscribe, we can, you know, absolutely pack all my workload, you know, you don't need to worry about it, it's all automatic. But guess what? What's going to suffer is your SQL Server performance. And guess what? Who's going to be screaming? It's your application users, the business users who are not going to get their reports on time, who are not going to get their application workload done.
We manage our servers like airlines get managed, right? We just hope that people buy more seats and then they don't show up. We hope that you're not going to use that all that power you need.
That way it doesn't work for SQL.
We can sell it two or three times and make really great profits on our chargeback.
So SQL, obviously, as you know, has its own OS. So those of you who didn't know that, SQL OS runs its own scheduling and memory management. So wherever possible, SQL likes to do its thing rather than waiting for Windows NT kernel or the Windows kernel to provide the cycles. So absolutely, don't overcommit CPU and memory in your environments. No matter how much your virtualization guys try to say, that's the fantastic way to go. From a hard drive configuration, this is something you guys would know from an I/O perspective. A lot of those tests that you saw before were done with fixed VHDs. And fixed VHDs provide us some with great flexibility. You talked about boot to VHD earlier. You talked about the ability to also do, you know, in-guest clustering with iSCSI interfaces and things like that. That's so some of the benefits that fixed VHDs brings through that pass-through doesn't. So pass-through is great if you're just using standalone SQL Server guest VMs and you need, you know, thorough raw throughput and raw performance. Another one, the next point about consolidated workload, this is something, again, might be a bit counterintuitive to the DBAs in the room. Typically, SQL Server, we like to have everything, from an I/O perspective, best practices is data should be separate to the log, separate to the temp, DB, and it should be all RAID 1, RAID 10 for best Fandango performance, right? But guess what? Now, if you start bringing each of these servers that had that best performance and into a consolidated environment, all of those sequential IOs that used to take place, when you bring 20 of them together, guess what those 20 sequential IOs end up being? Randomized IOs, right?
Absolutely.
So you absolutely want to make sure that when you do bring it into a consolidated virtualized environment, it's optimized for as good a random IOPS to provide that speed. So you don't have to worry about even separating data log and temp DB in that environment.
It's a really key point for the database people when they do this to talk to their storage people, because it is a huge area that we see. So unless you're using password disks or starting to allocate stuff specifically, this can be a big issue. All of a sudden people say, why didn't I got more IOPS before and I don't get them now? And it's quite a not intuitive area to think about. So we've definitely looked at this, the physical to virtual aspect. Certainly Microsoft have capabilities and technologies to move from physical to virtual. We have a P2V process that we can pick up and do. It's part of the System Center Virtual Machine Manager capability. Key to, again, make sure that you've aligned and picked up all of the storage, CPU, memory capabilities for this. Quite often as well, you'll end up with some weird things from an application perspective to make sure that you configure and make sure that you maintain MAC addresses. IP addresses are pretty standard, but MAC addresses are something that quite often there. Supported platforms, certainly we support a lot of P2V platforms, at least on the Windows side of things. Outside of that, there are techniques and processes to move others. But from a SQL Server perspective, these are the more common ones.
Excellent. So we now move away from the resource pooling pillar into the elasticity. So how do we now create? So now we've discovered the SQL Server environments in Lucene, and we saw there was a few of them. And how do we now create a target state? How do we create an environment that can allow me to scale as I require? So one of the key points here is around SQL Server's availability. Again, you know, Reid talked about this great technology that Hyper-V or, you know, even the VMware equivalent will bring in, you know, line migration, and there's clustering at the host level. But what does that offer SQL Server, Reid?
Well, that's exactly. I mean, why do you need all that high availability?
Well, you told me that only takes care of the guest VMs and the host itself and any issues at the host level.
Absolutely.
But what about SQL Server? The hypervisor knows nothing about it. So if your SQL Server service is actually down, guess what? Again, your application users are going to be the ones complaining. You're going to get all the calls. No matter how much live migration, vMotion, or whatever fancy words you can throw at me, I'm going to help that SQL database. It's down. That service is down. You migrate it or live migrate it or vMotion it from host 1 to host 2. Guess what? It's still down.
So but my infrastructure is really happy. Manager is really happy about that.
Oh, because he sees the host is up? That's it? What about the application guys? We always recommend, and again, the SQL guys stand strong on this, always recommend that we have high availability at the SQL Server level enabled as well. And this is typically through in-guest clustering. And this is actually also a differentiator with the Hyper-V and the other hypervisor, whereas with Hyper-V, we support the entire stack of Hyper-V's feature sets, so like live migration and even including when we have in-guest clustering for SQL Server. So we can have that capability and take advantage of what Reid was mentioning, that the infrastructure guys can provide with SQL Server through in-guest clustering, like failover clustering capability, or at least even database mirroring at the SQL Server level. So absolutely have that to be able to cater against failures at the SQL level, because guess what? Even if you have a corrupt page, for example, and you have database mirroring enabled, that corrupt page can automatically get fixed. That's one of the features we introduced in SQL 2008 R2. Whereas, no matter how much live migration you're going to be doing, you move that same VHD disk block across from one host to the other, you're still going to have that page corrupted, right? So you're not protecting yourself from a SQL failure. The other thing from an elasticity perspective, it also allows you to have guest VMs that could be in mixed match configuration. You could have guest VM for node 1 could be configured with 2 vCPUs, 8 gigs of RAM, and guest VM 2 on the host, host 2 could be configured with 4 vCPUs, 16 gigs, and the moment you need more horsepower, you just move across the SQL instance itself rather than having to vMotion or live migrate that entire workload. Yeah. Has it stopped?
Yeah, so basically this is, again, restating the same thing. Dynamic memory, definitely key. Hyper-V, R2, SP1, and making sure that we can increase the virtual machine density. Obviously, one of the larger cost factors from an infrastructure perspective are the servers and the amount of capability for feeding and watering them, making sure that you have power. All those things cost a lot of money, and we want to provide the highest density that you're comfortable with and that we can provide to you. So the technologies like live migration, like high availability, like dynamic memory and such do offer those consolidation ratios that you can expect. These are now put us well on par with other virtualization technologies, but offer you the flexibility, as we said before, to move back and forth to physical if you want to, or optimize it as necessary.
Great. So it is still good to have those features for entire availability of the private cloud environment. The dynamic memory is something that's great that SQL Server can take advantage of. With SQL Server's capability around being able to hot add CPU and memory, something we added in enterprise editions of SQL Server 2005 and beyond, dynamic memory really plays well with SQL. We're able to go through and assign, instead of static memory to each of the guest VMs, we can put in a range of what the minimum and max should be. And SQL's able to play along with that due to SQL's own native capability around setting min and max memory settings. And SQL Server now can work in the bounds of the memory. What that allows you to do is not only pack more VMs in, and the fact that these VMs will never address more memory than actually is on the host is great, because that doesn't cause any performance degradation from a paging out and things like that. So SQL is still going to use as much of the host memory as possible, and is able to buffer a lot more into that memory and cause less IOs. So we end up with a better performance that way.
So what you're telling me is that SQL is actually optimized for Hyper-V and dynamic memory.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, that's really a great thing. So basically, then we can wrap that up and manage the entire environment with System Center and the family products, with System Center Operations Manager and the tools associated with that to detect your alerts and alarms, and then adjust the infrastructure appropriately, provided that we keep and maintain our SQL resources so they get the permissions and the resources they want.
Great. So let's have a look at what that looks like.
Fantastic. We're going to get into Lucerne a little bit more here.
We are. So where we are in this Lucerne System Center Virtual Machine Manager environment. So I've got a whole raft of virtual machines running, and it's running actually on just one host here.
Just a word of warning, never let your database people drive the hypervisor.
Except me, I'm
don't,
okay,
don't,
right?
Don't do this. We're on television.
No. Right. So a typical place where you'd start to build virtual machine environments is you start with a base OS. You can have sysprepped images of base OSs and then work off that and install SQL Server. But one of the issues that's always been part of SQL Server and deploying in a SQL environment is that until SQL 2008 R2, you couldn't sysprep SQL database environments. And so that resulted in having to either write command line sort of script files and install based on that. And you needed to have that as a post-installation step. One of the things we added, as I mentioned, in 2008 R2 is this ability to set up sysprep images. So I can come into the installation center of SQL Server 2008 R2, go into advanced, and then launch the image preparation of a standalone instance. So this allows us to now, this will actually go through an install screen. I'm not going to go through that just in the essence of time. But what I did that before, and it essentially goes off and creates two things. It creates an install sql.cmd file and a configuration file. In this configuration file is the list, the name of the instance that I'm going to create. It's a default instance, as you can see, MS SQL Server. The action that's going to do, which is to complete the image, which is essentially going to install SQL Server. If you tried to do like a pre-built install of SQL and then just copy a VHD and paste it and then try to boot that up again, you're going to have all sorts of strife with the SQL install, because SQL actually has a lot of the GUIDs for the service accounts and in the registry, all specific to that install of SQL Server. So it's not as easy as just doing a copy paste and it'll all work together. So you need to sysprep it. So I've gone through and created a sysprep image. As you saw, it's got the install SQL CMD. Once I go through and do that, in System Center Virtual Machine Manager, you can create what's known as libraries. This is essentially like, think about
It's a server template, and you put in your server virtual machine, your virtual machine templates in here, which can have already pre-installed applications. And I'll let you take it away and show
you. Yeah. So essentially just a pre-built library of things that you can reuse. So things like virtual machines itself, or even the software, like ISO files. If you commonly are going to be accessing SQL Server 2008 media files, you can put them in the library, and they can be commonly accessed by multiple users. So here it's asking me what sort of computer name. Do I create a random one? I'll just let it do a random one. What the admin password should be, what the product keys we should use, what OS version, which domain we should join, and it's the Lucerne domain. And here's the SQL bit, where it goes off and does the install of a SQL. So it's got the install sql.cmd.
Has anyone given this a try with VMM? So one of the things that was shown earlier on today in a first morning session today was associated with both this, but in a SCVMM 2012 context. And there's, a template built into SCVMM 2012 associated with the SQL and does the same capability. A little bit nicer, a little bit more automated, and a little bit more cleaner. But the technology and the base capability is already GA and has been for quite a while for this today.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. So what I've done while Reid was talking, I'm actually just gone through and connected to, here's one that's pre-prepared in my oven, right? So I'm like a cook show here. So this is one that we deployed with SQL Server install. As you can imagine, this is a point of sale. It's a bookshop. One of their main applications is going to be a point of sale system. And here's the Lucene publishing point of sale system based on an ASP.NET application using SQL in the backend. And we're going to buy Reid's favorite book here, the Hyper-V Administrator Guide. I think you need to do some study. So we can go off and buy that. So you can see that the application's up and running, SQL's running, and all that was done was deployed through the template.
It's a fantastic value.
So I'm going to go through and show you a few other things. Where am I? That's all right. Yeah, so what I'm going to show you here is that we can actually go through and look at the properties of the VM. And one of the hardware configurations from a memory perspective is that it's set up to be dynamic memory. So instead of the static value, we're saying give it from 512 megs to up to a gig. And then it's able to request that from the host as and when it's needed rather than constantly grabbing 1 gigabyte of memory all the time. And you see that there's a memory buffer here as well. By default, it takes 20% above and beyond for that those just-in-case scenarios. But let's have a look at what happens when at the SQL Server end. So when we go to SQL Server, open up Management Studio, we actually see that it actually has taken the maximum memory setting, which is the 1024 megs. So this we actually, from a recommendation perspective, when you use dynamic memory, you have SQL Server settings to be set at the maximum memory so that it's able to dynamically move within that range and take advantage of it.
Just a word of warning, this is not how to please your DBAs, to give them 1 gig of memory. Yeah, it doesn't go over so well.
Okay.
Yeah. This is why they don't buy me coffee in the morning.
So here I'll come back to that image, and when I look at that image and look at the resource monitor on here, the memory actually is being used to 663 megs. So it's gone beyond and asked for, because it's running SQL Server workload on it, a real workload as opposed
and
to
this
just
is why I didn't give you any
OS.
More memory. You're not using it all.
So we see that it's actually gone through and requested 663 megs. The other thing we can also set is priority in the system setter virtual machine manager to actually go through and say this application, because it's SQL Server based, we need to give it high priority from a CPU perspective and when it actually comes to also memory requests. Isn't that right, Reid?
Yeah, so this is a common, I've actually had a two or three conversations just last night and today associated exactly with that, making sure that when you virtualize something, that you do commit and give that resources to the application. A few application people came to me and said, I don't like virtualization. Why? Because I got screwed over by the VMware team. Oh, sorry, my apologies, by the virtualization team. sorry, that was a faux pas. Absolutely, the virtualization team, you've got to make sure that you give the right amount of resources. Otherwise, you can make it always look bad, right? And that's an important construct, right? So make sure you are generous to your team, and then they'll actually come and maybe buy you a coffee once in a while.
All right. So with that, hopefully that's given you a bit of idea of how System Center Virtual Machine Manager can help you create that an elastic environment through dynamic memory, through setting priorities on the guest VMs. Now we move on to what really makes it a cloud environment, which is around the self-service capability and giving power to the business users. Or at least the IT admins within the business to request for different services and applications.
So Microsoft has a capability in production today called Self-Service Portal 2.0. And Self-Service Portal 2.0 is really about providing an end user, or should say business user application level interface, to be able to then go in and do approvals, requests for resources, requests for virtual machines and capability, and then goes through a workflow process of automation for automating approvals, receiving those approvals, and then going through the aspect of, hey, now that you've accepted that approval, let's go and deploy it in an automated fashion. So there's, I know, a number of tools out there. This was actually written as a tool, sort of sits to the side of the core infrastructure group within Microsoft, and you can download this. It's a free capability on top of Hyper-V and SCVMM today for Hyper-V, and works, of course, with the templates and things that you set up inside of VMM. So IT administrations can set up your resource pooling. You set up the various roles and capability within the portal, and then it will automatically go out and do that. It's written in a combination of PowerShell and a bunch of web-based capabilities. This is absolutely, if you're going to set this up today, the way to do it. In another 9, 12, 9, as SC or SSE VMM 2012 comes out and the next release comes out, then some of that functionality will be rolled into the more updated portals that are coming out with that. So realistically, this has, I guess, another 6 to 9 months of lifespan for your environments today. And then after that, you probably would look at shifting over to the updated versions.
Excellent. So
let's have a look at it.
Yeah, let's switch
this
over.
This is good stuff, because now I get a chance to get in there with the infrastructure stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Provide
absolutely.
You that Elastic Cloud.
And it'll still let me run the demos.
I know. I don't know
it's
why.
It's pretty good. All right. So
I've trained them.
So what I'm going to show you here is System Center Virtual Machine Manager. What's the short form? Self-Service Portal.
SSP.
SSP. There you go.
Exactly.
Okay. So I'm logged in here, as you can see on the bottom, top right-hand corner, the Lucene Sales IT Admin. So this is from the sales unit, the IT guy that looks after my sales unit of my business. So first thing that I need to do in Virtual Machine Manager SSP, or Self-Service Portal, is to go through and register the business. So I'm going to, obviously I'm part of the sales business, so call it sales. My unit code, give it that fancy code.
So this is where the business people are going and starting to request for access to the portal, and this information will go off to the IT management group or infrastructure group, and the next screen, and so this is what they're requesting from us. They want access for the store.
Yeah, so I've gone through and requested that my business unit be registered. So now I'll come back here and I'll log in as my IT guy.
So now he's going to take and play my role a bit, because I'm the IT manager, and he's going to log in as me and say, deny. Should we deny you?
No, let's
we'll
go through and be nice and go
we'll
through
approve.
And approve. Okay. So you can see there's that workflow element already built in. So I'm going to go and say, put in my long approval statement here of okay. And there you go. It says done as that. Now I can go back and put my hat as the sales IT admin. I think I'm going to be schizophrenic at the end of this demo.
Absolutely. Switch your hats here, and we're going to then go back to be your business app owner.
Yeah. So now I can view my requests, and I can see that I'm actually it's come through and approved already, so which is great. So now I can go through into my infrastructures tab and start requesting for infrastructure. Maybe I should go to town and get some big servers here.
That's one of the fastest approvals ever in corporate history.
Yeah. No bureaucracy. Did I say that loud? Okay, so service. So here I'm going to create my infrastructure name, which is essentially, I'm going to create that. Oh, I remember we were talking about a TechEd store, right? So let's create that TechEd infrastructure.
Exactly.
So we'll go through and put in TechEd. Put in a priority of high, because tech has already started, so let's get it cranking. Let's put in a date here for decommissioning. I'll just put a random date. And then we go through and put in the memory request for my service here. And so I'm going to require, based on the previous demos that I was running, 2 gigs should be plenty. I know he's a bit stingy on the side. So I'll just go 2 gigs and 200 gigs for storage, and hit save next. You saw that you could actually have the opportunity to upload if you have architectural documents, you know, Word documents, Visio documents, upload those and put them in the request so that my friend Reed, as an IT administrator, would get all of that information.
We want to keep on top of these people.
So what? Now we're actually talking about what this infrastructure. So we first said, okay, that's the infrastructure we need. Now we're talking about what service this infrastructure is going to actually perform. And it's going to perform my sales transactions service. So it's my point of sale, essentially. And it's going to go into my production environment. And here you can start seeing some elements around what we'll see in the next pillar, which is around the chargeback and the control around that. So you can see that I can start putting in elements for billing code. And what is this actual service going to use? So this service, in from a quota perspective, out of the 2 gigs and 200 gigs of storage that I'd requested, it's going to only use 1 gig of memory and maybe, say, 150 gigs of storage. And then I'll add which network I want to be part of. Then I'll add the users that will get access to this environment. And essentially, it's in my Lucene domain. It's going to be sales operators. And the business users are going to be the sales users. And each service actually has a service role that can be played. And in this case, this service role is essentially just the point of sale system. And I'm going to go through and hit save and next. And now comes to the part where I'd already created the template around that point of sale environment with, you know, if you remember that little application we had deployed out. So we've got this template. I'll select that's the template I want to use.
So that's the same template as in Virtual Machine Manager has?
Yeah, absolutely. So we can now see that. This is my summary of my request. If I want to make any changes, I'm able to do that before I go through and hit the final submit.
So behind the scenes, the SSP2 is really driving Virtual Machine Manager and Hyper-V using PowerShell, and this is a kind of an overlay on top of that to allow some of these gathering of the data and the interaction between the business unit and IT infrastructure.
So I've gone through and it's gone come up into my request when I logged in as back in as the IT administrator. And you can see there's actually multiple areas for me to look at because there was, first of all, the infrastructure request, then there was the actual service and the actual virtual machine template that we assigned to that service role.
So now you've made your official request and you're logged in as the IT administrator. You're sort of spoofing me these days.
I am. So I just want to make sure that this business guys aren't going and requesting too many things.
Let's
make sure that we'll keep them honest. So here you can put in things like, you know, which template library, where am I going to host this environment? So I'm going to be using that one server that I have in this particular environment. But if you have a farm of VMs servers, and actually, I don't know if you mentioned this, or you might have mentioned this in the previous talks, is that this could actually be either a Hyper-V environment or even a VMware environment. System Center works across either one of those.
Absolutely.
And so here I go through and assign which server, and you can start seeing some of the quota information here. Again, some of those elements around chargeback, so you can see how much money or how much units we're going to allocate to a cost per gigabyte per day for memory and for storage. So we'll go through and save that. The next thing is the service role. Do we need to make sure check if they need any additional things in their service? Do they need a load balancer in front of this point of sale environment? Because it's only tech ed, it's not really going to require one. So I'm not going to really make any changes there. And then the virtual machine template. Just make sure that is that the right virtual machine template we want the business to be working with.
Absolutely.
We'll just go through and approve that as well. So the overall request, I'll go through and hit approve. And again, I'll put my lot of comments in here. It's gone through and gone through in three approval process now. So I'll now log in back in, actually not as the sales IT admin guy, but as the sales IT operator. So I'm actually now logged in as a sales operator in this environment. And now you can see I'm still in the System Center Virtual Machine Manager environment. I can go through and start requesting virtual machines to be created. Nothing's been assigned to me yet. All we did was to create that infrastructure request, We've said this is the type of roles, this is the template we could use against that particular request. So I'm going to go through and create a virtual machine.
So the equivalent of what you've set up is in VMM 2012 would be called a service template. And now that that service template's been set up and now it's being requested, then you can actually have it automatically deployed.
Absolutely. So we also have, so I've just gone through and while Reed was talking, put in the computer name. You could actually get SCVMM to go off and assign a random name, or you can go off and specify a name. So it's my point of sales server for TechEd, which Active Directory domain we wanted to join. And when, more importantly, we also can decommission this. Now, we may decommission this because it's only going to run as my test environment or so. So I'll just put in a random date there and a notification. So this is important. We get notification from before it actually goes off and decommissions it. So if you want to back up your data before you actually go through and switch off this virtual machine manager, virtual machine environment, you're able to go and do that. So you get enough notification for that. So it's going through and creating that virtual machine environment. And so that's as simple as that. So I'll leave it here. And in interest of time, we'll move to the next section.
Sure. So that was the self-service demo. And a lot of those capabilities, or all that capabilities today, it gets a lot better in 2012 in the next couple of months going forward. So we're talking really about control and key customization key steps, really looking at the driving to standardization, really looking at making sure that you have standard defined templates, that you have your roles set up.
Excellent. So the last component to this cloud is around the usage analysis of what have businesses now. It's great to enable them to do self-service requests, but we want to still have IT control into that and still understand how many machines have been requested, who's using what, have that chargeback mechanism. So System Center Virtual Machine Manager Self-Service Portal has this capability. And also from a monitoring perspective, as I mentioned, Hypervisor knows everything about what's happening just up till the guest VM or OS level, but it doesn't really know what's happening at the SQL level. And some of the things I commonly hear is, performance of SQL Server is not doing too well. Well, the only thing we've changed is that we've moved to a virtualization environment. It must be that guy's fault, virtualization guy's fault.
Virtualization gets the blame all the time.
So we actually need to have proper elements or tools to be able to actually monitor this. And it's good to know that System Center Operations Manager can allow you to not only see what's happening from a performance level on the host level, but the guest OS as well as the SQL Server service itself. So this is a great way of giving back information, and this will be great for you guys as infrastructure people to actually prove, okay, it's not actually a VM-level problem. It might be a SQL health problem. It might be actually a blocking issue because System Center Operations Manager, Management Pack for SQL Server, has a lot of those rules built in.
Sorry, did I just hear you right? You were actually offering me something good?
I know, the first one. I'll let you have that one.
That's fantastic. So we're coming closer all the time here.
Awesome. Hopefully by the end of this, we'll actually deploy one in real life. So here we are at back again in System Center Virtual Machine Manager. In my previous demo, I also was showing you there were abilities to actually put in billing codes and chargeback information. But overall, you can also set this at an entire infrastructure level setting. So at the data center's resources set level, we can actually put in a charge of what memory costs should be. And this is based on units. This is not actual currency or anything. So you still need a business model at the end of this to convert these units into whatever business model.
This is a notional chargeback or showback. It's just an accounting bit
included
in the self-service portal.
And you can do it down to actually individual virtual machine templates as well. So you can assign costs associated to that. And down to even the individual service request for that infrastructure, as we saw in the previous screens. And again, here, so we can actually override what the overall settings are, and if it's a specific infrastructure request, if it's a tier one app and, you know, has different levels of SLAs, then we may charge more for that same memory and disk. And then we have some simple reporting that's available out of the box with a self-service portal dashboard itself. So here we're seeing how many, this is an insight into how many, what infrastructure requests are coming through by which unit. So you can see finance requested 2, marketing 1, and so on and so forth. And you can actually go into the detail level information as well.
With reports like that, you could go from zero to hero in no time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then from
a
resources perspective as well, we can actually see, these are, so we remember that each service that we request has that service role. We can actually go down to that level and see what was provisioned. And then lastly, based on the chargeback units that we had configured, it also creates a report based on the chargeback units. And so we can see for the different business units of finance, what sales had over time, and it averages those out for the months. And then we can actually see down to the details as well for the same sales unit. So you can actually go through and understand that, you know, sales in the unit in the month of March had, you know, used 4,200 units, and now you can convert that information using your business models to convert to actual currencies.
This is fantastic for managers. They have to have those big chunky charts because, you know,
money comes in.
Well, it's those glasses. You know,
So if you need, so you saw that there's mainly around storage and memory, but if you need more granular level of information.
So absolutely. The chargeback mechanism, or I should say the accounting mechanism built into Self-Service Portal 2, was put in there as an elementary capability for getting started with clouds. It was brought in last year, and it's something that we've encouraged other partners like vKernel to provide additional benefits. So as you're moving into the private cloud capability and getting more entrenched with that this year, if you want more detail accounting, there are third parties like vKernel that do some of that stuff and provide a much more granular capability both at the application as well as external costs of power, cooling, you know, those types of things that they can put into their environment.
So great. So hopefully, you know, through this hour and a bit now that you've sat through in this session, it actually has convinced you that that SQL Server or any sort of database workload can now be virtualized with the right hypervisor, with the right hardware. But some things that you want to also be aware of, so this is some of the learnings that we had working with the customer that virtualized around 364 SQL Servers. So apart from all the other 3,000-odd or 2,000-odd servers that they had already virtualized. Some of the things that they encountered, and these are not from a technical perspective, these are things we covered the technical perspectives, but these are things that you need to be mindful of. First one was about, does your app vendor support you when running SQL Server in a virtualized environment? A lot of them will actually come back and say no, because they haven't actually done that themselves. So you need to work through that process. Don't just start, you know, P2Ving or using all those funky tools to bring in SQL under a virtualized environment, because you could end up with supportability issues. Next thing is commonly we hear is business users, you know, who used to pay for 16 CPU boxes and had 16 gigs of RAM or 24 gigs of RAM, they were physical, are now brought into a virtual environment, which is 4 vCPUs and maybe 16 gigs of RAM. So all of a sudden, 16, 4, something doesn't calculate here. So you need to make sure you are doing actually benchmarking and showing them that the performance they're actually getting with the modern hardware and the more number of cores in our environment, we actually, you know, the old 16 CPUs does not equal to, or you know, it does not mean you need to have 16 CPUs in your virtual environment as well. So make sure you have proven benchmarking and test cases to show that your performance hasn't degraded. Other things are around, we already talked about the post-VM classic blame read or the read equivalent in your organization, blame the infrastructure guys. Right. Other things that actually changes behavior around deployment of SQL Server. DBAs might have had standard scripts and standard build items. Those may now need to be replaced or tuned to work with things like systems and a virtual machine manager.
And I guess then following up with that, things like backup, capabilities, again, reiterating a lot of the things we talked about, storage, but those are aspects which oftentimes aren't communicated through the entire chain, from the storage to the infrastructure people through to the SQL people. So those are definitely key areas there.
So next steps in terms of where we're today, we talked about all of the technology that's available and what you can achieve with today's technology. Reed touched upon what's happening with System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012, really great, exciting ways of deploying SQL and cloud solutions in general. A lot of this information is available on the URL there. And coming soon later this year is both two things: reference architecture, which is essentially like a cookbook of, we've actually listed out what you need to do if you're planning a private cloud environment of SQL Server of 140 or 150 VMs, for example. This is down to the what's required at the hardware level, all the way up to the software level. And then we actually now implement that as an appliance with HP. And that's going to be called the Database Consolidation Appliance. It'll come in a half rack and a full rack environment. Obviously, all of the, you know, one throat, single throat to from a support perspective. It's optimized for a database workload. So not only SQL, but it could run Oracle, it could run Sybase, anything like that. And there's actually a full session on this appliance on Friday. Thursday morning. And here's, you know, that's just awesome. A preliminary look at it. So that's the half rack. It's based on Blades. The one is similarly full rack. It comes with the storage as well already, as I mentioned, pre-tuned and pre-configured. So it's ready to go with all the best practices. So how does it work? It has, again, all the software preloaded and configured. So System Center, Virtual Machine Managers, Operations Manager, all of that goodness that we demonstrated today will be out of the box. You plug it in and, you know, within a few hours you can start bringing in either via P2V mechanisms your existing workloads or creating using the blank templates we provide.
So I can definitely think that we can agree that this type of infrastructure makes us both happy.
Yeah, absolutely. We could absolutely be friends.
Fantastic.
Finally.
There you go.
So thank you very much, guys, for spending the hour with
some
us.
Resources. And we've got, fill in your evals. You can win a touch mouse. Definitely 10 prizes every day to give away. And I think the next slide is, and there's some HP requirement there. So I think we're just about out of time. If there's some questions, happy to take them, or we can take them offline here. So thank you for attending, and enjoy the rest of the conference.